Today is January 30th, 1991. The time is 9:42. This morning we are going to interview Alfred Anthony Ryder, a lifelong resident of Madison Heights. Mr. Ryder was a postman in Madison Heights for over 30 years. Today we discuss this and many other interesting facets of Mr. Ryder's life. Mr. Ryder, please state your name and present address for this taped interview.
Well, my name is Alfred A. Ryder Anthony. I was born in what was Royal Oak Township. Okay. Madison Heights as an entity didn't exist until about 1956. And my folks moved out here in 1914.
Okay, they moved out to where now?
To 9.5 mile road in John R. And okay. I was born on the southeast corner, and my brother started in the Lacey School, I think in the fall of 19. Lacey School was in Hazel Park.
Okay, so your family originally moved to Hazel Park.
Yes.
You were born where? In Madison Heights?
I was born in Hazel Park, on the corner of 9.5 mile and John R.
Okay. Now, how many times did your family move before they finally settled in Madison Heights?
They moved, it used to be you rented a farm, you had rented by the year, or you rented for 6 months for the growing season, and you headed back for Detroit, or maybe with relation to tighten up, or if you had some animals, some stock, or something like that, you maybe stayed on the farm and spent the winter looking for a cheaper one, or a better one, whatever you could afford. Mm-hmm. But the people drifted a lot. But it seems like my folks lived in a place about 3 years.
Okay.
They moved in where I was born in 1914, and they moved from there in January of 1919. They moved about 2 months after I was born.
Okay.
And it was so cold when they moved, they kept the fire. They moved on what they called a flatbed or a hay rack.
Okay.
And they left the fire in the stove.
Oh, you're kidding.
Right on the wagon. They had it up there. They had it tied there so it wouldn't tip over. And they left the stovepipe on it for a draft. And the stove was smoking as they moved. And my mom, I think, sat by the stove holding me in a rocking chair or something so I wouldn't freeze. And then when they got to where they were moving, which was only about a half a mile from where they were.
Now, that was in Hazel Park,
that
too?
That was in Hazel Park,
okay.
Too. They moved to this farther west, 9.5 mile road. They moved between John R. and Campbell.
Okay.
Where they were over at John R., they moved. Now, that's only a short distance, or a little over a quarter of a mile.
Okay.
A half a mile to about where they were, and they stayed there about 4 years.
Okay.
They stayed there, I'll say 3 years.
Okay.
And then they moved from there to 11 Mile Road in Stevenson.
Oh.
It was in, I think, 1921 or 22.
So that would have been Madison Heights.
It was Royal Oak Township.
Royal Oak Township, right.
Madison Heights didn't exist.
That's right.
And they lived there then until they put the Stevenson Highway through.
Okay.
They farmed. I remember seeing oat fields and the potatoes that we had growing between 11 Mile Road and 4th Street.
Okay.
And they had when it come to growing oats, when it come time to thrash them, they went out with the binder and cut them and tied them in bundles. Then they had the stack of oats in our yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came in with the steam thrashing machine, the steam engine,
mm-hmm.
and pulled the thrasher behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then they set up the thrasher and the belts, and then they had the harvest crew come in, and they brought fantastic appetites with them.
Yeah.
8 or 10 men come in to work with the thrashing machine,
mm-hmm.
and they bagged the thrash the oats. It goes through the rollers and gets the oats off of the straw. And then they blew the straw up in one pile, and they bagged the oats on the side of the machine.
Now,
it was a great fire hazard. You had to be sure you had the steam engine downwind from the thrasher because they threw sparks.
Okay, now you lived there, what, 4 years?
We lived there approximately, I would probably say 3 years.
Okay, and then from where there?
Then from there, when they were putting the highway through, they had to tear the big farmhouse down. It was a 10 or 11 room house, big farmhouse.
Okay.
And they tore, and that was on the north side of 11 Mile Road, right where 75 goes through.
Okay.
They tore that down, and then they moved from there in the spring. I think it was about March when they moved. They moved to 15 Mile Road on another one of the B.F. Stevenson farms.
Okay.
And They stayed there 3 days. It was on 15 Mile Road at that time in 1926. There was one car a day went through. One, he went to work in the morning to Highland Park, and he drove back at night. And that was the only public transportation. If I remember right, 15 Mile was paved. John R. was paved.
Okay.
And my ma read in the paper where some woman, they had a deep well there and a cistern and then the pump stuckers and everything else. And it was a huge well, about 6-8 feet in diameter and a deep one. And the pump sucker up through the middle of it. When my ma read in the Pontiac paper, the Pontiac Daily paper, they're still publishing it, and Some woman on a farm, I don't know where it was, that somebody attacked the woman in the farmhouse and threw her down in the well, and the standpipe or the sucker pipe in the center, the intake pipe for the well, penetrated her.
Oh my God!
She was impaled on that pipe. So my ma lost her nerve about staying out there in the wilderness.
Okay.
And so then they had to find another house, and they moved back to his 9.5 Mile Road.
Okay.
To friends that had the little house down there. So they came down from 10 rooms of furniture to 4.
Okay.
And my pa had to build a barn down there for the horses and stuff like that. Then they stayed there. Oh, I think that was in March again of 1925.
Okay.
And then they stayed there. Well, didn't stay there long, maybe a year, and then they moved up where I'm at on Harwood.
On Harwood, okay.
In 19, I moved there in September of 26, and I started to school at the Oakland School, which is over Hudson and Stevenson, now in Royal Oak, but it was in the Madison District.
Okay. Before we get into that now, I want to ask you, your father made a living how when you moved to this area?
They called it general teaming.
Okay.
Teaming with the horses. He would go out, he would plow gardens, he would cut weeds with the mowing machine, he would dig basements.
Okay.
He'd make streets. When a subdivision, put streets in a subdivision and sidewalk and stuff like that, he would go out there with a team of horses for about $6 or $7 a day, and they would put the crown in the center of the street.
Oh, I see.
They would dig down, or they'd plow a couple of furrows up, and then they'd take a grader and they'd roll that up with a grader. And we had a horse drawn grader.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he did a couple other things too, didn't he? Besides using his wagon.
He used to move trees.
Yes. Now this
he
is
used
interesting.
To move trees as up as 8-9 inches on a little horse, a one-horse wagon, a two-horse wagon, and it was like an artillery. It looked, the only way I can describe it to you would be like a field artillery piece.
Okay.
That would disassemble, you could, or dismantle it.
This was the wagon you're talking about.
I'm talking about,
yeah,
the wagon.
Okay.
You could take it to pieces and sections, and they would use that to move the tree.
Okay, now you explain to me how they did this. Tell me how they dismantled the wagon and what happened.
Well, what I'm going to explain to you is hearsay, because I've never seen it done. I was too small to take into the woods to see it done.
That's fine.
But they used to go out, and they would dig a trench around the tree about 2.5-3 feet from the trunk.
Okay.
And they would dig down 18-20 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could, they liked to let it freeze overnight. Because when you go in the woods, under the leaves and everything, the frost doesn't penetrate too far.
Okay.
There'd be snow there and leaves and everything, and maybe leaves from 7-8 seasons that didn't fully deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose today we'd call it a rich, loamy soil.
Yeah.
And then they'd like to have that freeze on there, and then they'd come the next morning, and they'd bring the tree wagon.
Okay.
And they'd drive up within reasonable distance from it, and within close as they could get to it, because the wagon wasn't easy to handle by itself.
Okay.
And they'd dismantle the wagon, and then they would take the back off of it, and they would push that up, two or three men would push it up there by hand, and stand the boom on it, or the beam on it, which would be like the artillery piece. They'd stand that up straight in the air.
Okay.
And they'd put that against the tree trunk.
Okay.
Then they would either chain or rope or tie the tree trunk to the cannon, the boom and the wheels under it.
Okay.
And they would use the wheels then as the fulcrum.
Okay.
And they would use the top of the tree as the lever.
Okay.
And they would, if it was a real big tree, they would hook a small block and tackle up in the tree before they ever started to bend it or pull it out.
Okay.
And then they would start tipping the tree on the wheels, on the axle.
Okay.
Like you start bringing it over.
Okay.
And they would use the horses to draw that tree over, and that would raise what they, at that time, the bottom of the tree that they had dug out, they'd call that the butt.
Okay.
And they would mess that up and then get under there with axes and cut the roots off so that they carried about 2 feet of dirt on that butt.
Okay.
And then if it wasn't frozen enough, they would wrap it with some kind of padding. They had blankets, horse blankets, or burlap bags, or anything, and try to tie it there to keep the dirt on the tree on the roots.
Okay.
Then they would bring then after they got that tree tipped over, if it was a big tree, they would wrap the branches. They'd come try to squeeze the branches down, like to make them to narrow it down, because they can extend over 15 feet from 10, 12, 15 feet from the trunk.
Okay.
So they try to bring the branches up to tie it so they could take it down in traffic.
Okay.
Then they would slide the bottom of the wagon, the platform, under it.
Okay.
Then they would, there was eye bolts there and pins and chains on there, a hand windlass, that they would crank it up with a bar about so long.
Okay.
About 3 feet long.
About
3 feet long. And then they would lift that back of the tree, that whole tree up on that, and then they would let the butt come down on that platform. And then there was other, I guess you'd call them, big eye bolts. They would be about 2 feet long, and the back of the wagon had other hooks there that were adjustable.
Mm-hmm.
And they would bring that back there. They served like as radius rods, so with the wagon, the thing didn't twist on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it was secure.
He did a lot of trees like this, didn't he?
Oh yes, he thought nothing of moving 70, 80 a winter.
Where did they take these trees?
Anywhere that they could know anybody wanted a tree, and that he worked for the Detroit Shade Tree Company for a long time.
Okay.
And they moved on the average of 5 a week.
Oh my God!
All summer long, all
that's
winter
a lot of
long,
work.
All winter long, yeah. And they used to go from 9.5 mile road in John R., where my pa lived, and he'd come out. He'd walk the horses, maybe out here to 10.5 or 11 mile road in DeQuinder, and get a tree out of the woods there, and then they'd take it to Grosse Pointe.
Okay.
Go down on Vernier and Jefferson and those Smack and those streets down there. They go down in there. They take that tree down in a horse and wagon. The two horses in the wagon, they'd walk it down, and that was before the streets were snowplowed or anything else. The horses just walked down the track in the road, so they had put, like with the car tracks, but they were wagon tracks, and the horses just go down the road. And they take that great big tree down there. It didn't matter if it was 10 below zero or what, they took it down there.
Okay, I got a question now.
Yes.
Besides the tree moving, your father did something. He had another special job that he did on John Arnold. What else did he do for side money?
Well, he dug basements.
Okay, but something else you told me he did. Something to help the travelers. Something on John R. that he did. Didn't he pull people out of ruts?
Oh, one of the people, this used to be in the spring, like I showed the little picture I had
yeah.
there, but the picture is only symbolic because it's from the Secretary of
right.
State's office, was in the local papers.
He was like the early AAA Society.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And for $2 or $3, which was big money at that time,
sure.
he'd go out and pull the people out of the mud holes.
He really put his wagon to good use. He had a lot of
well,
he,
a lot of times it was within walkable and walking distance from home. When I say walking distance, a half a mile, he didn't bother to use the wagon.
Okay.
There was nothing like a wrecker that you lifted the front of the truck up or anything
yeah.
like that. You just tied the chain or you snaked the chain around the frame and axle and bumper and used the horses to pull them out. It'd be just like as if you maybe used a small tractor or a bulldozer today to pull something out, to hook a chain on and pull it out, drag it out.
Okay.
And he did that, and he pulled 15, 20 people out every spring for
really?
A couple of dollars. And then with the mowing machine, he used to go around cutting subdivisions.
Okay.
When subdivisions were sparsely built up, and the subdivider, to try and make an impression, wanted to have the weeds cut.
Oh, okay.
It looked so much so
impressive.
Make
it look presentable.
Make it look presentable, yes. It was impressive. Oh, they trimmed the weeds, and many of the subdivisions didn't have sidewalks. Many of them didn't have sewers or even water in them.
Okay.
But Stevenson was one of the, you might say more of the elite or the exclusive subdivisions. He had sewer, water, and sidewalks in them and gravel streets before he sold them.
That was located where?
Well, along Stevenson Highway.
Okay.
The Stevenson subdivisions originally started down around Oakland Avenue or I-75 or not quite 75. It's still Oakland Avenue in Detroit, but the Stevenson subdivision started down there, and then he would buy a farm back to back going out, trying to get a quarter of a mile wide or whatever, a third of a mile wide.
To get parcels together.
And parcels, yeah, to make a continuous band up through there.
And he was working his way out this way.
The B.F. Stevenson was. Not my pa, B.F. Stevenson, where the money was.
Right.
And my pa worked for him. He worked for him from about the 7 mile road north all the way to the 15, putting the Stevenson subdivision through, or subdivisions. And some days he would backfill sewers. They had a mechanical digger. They had a big old Buckeye digger. They called Bucyrus Theory.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun to watch him crank that to start it.
Okay, I have a question. In the course of our discussion, you mentioned that you had two brothers and one sister, but that your mother had three other children that died while very young. Give us an example of the hazards of childbirth during the early 1900s.
Well, of course, never having been a mother and having been there, because I was about the last one coming along, it was difficult. But as I understood by the stories, that my mother lost her first child in, I think, 1905 or 6, 5, mm-hmm. I guess. 5 or 6 they lost her, because I don't remember the exact date of the birth anymore.
Okay.
The little girl only lived, I think, 2 or 3 days.
Sure.
What caused the death, it was going to be a normal child, but the house they were living in, a two-story house, they got on fire. And they weren't tipped off that the house was burning or anything. It started from a faulty chimney, because they didn't used to put flue liners in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the chimney got on fire and burnt the roof off of the house where my mom was living, and she inhaled a lot of smoke before she realized that the house was on fire.
Okay.
And inhaling that smoke and getting it in her system, she was partially, what you might say, asphyxiated from the smoke, and it got in her bloodstream.
Okay.
And here she was within 2 days or so of giving birth to the baby, and that all seemed to poison the baby's lungs too.
Mm-hmm.
Because the blood transfers between the mother and the youngster.
Sure.
And so the baby only lasted about 2 or 3 days, and she was gone.
Okay.
Then, of course, as natural as things go, it was only a year and a half later why she was pregnant with my brother.
Okay.
And when he was born, my ma weighed 80 pounds and he weighed around 16.
Oh, my goodness.
He was a big baby, and she had to have a cesarean sectional.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the clever operations they do now. But it was just a straight, she was cut from her vagina to the navel.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they took him, and then they sewed her back together. And it was there was very little for pain or anything at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little chloroform, or there was nothing for infections or anything. Oh, perhaps iodine is not the best, it burns. I think they had iodine then, and they used to have turpentine.
Kind of rugged.
It was typical. I used to enjoy listening to Gunsmoke, where old Doc Stone used to go out, take his case with him, and he had some syrup of Ipecac and maybe a couple of aspirins and a couple of other herbs there in a little suitcase, and he'd give you that to fix. And that was just the way it was when they were born.
Okay.
And my brother, anyhow, was born, but at that time they didn't issue birth certificates.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor, maybe if you asked him, would give you a statement that he attended the birth and he charged you so much.
Okay.
And he's alive today. He's 83 past, and he lives in Warren there, Eckert's Trailer Park, and he's in excellent health. But anyhow, he went on, and then maybe another year and a half, 2 years later, she had another youngster. But I understand all this time there was no prenatal care. The prenatal, what in the world was prenatal care? I don't even know if the word was in the dictionary.
Okay. You're just kind of on your own.
You were on your own when the baby was born. Either you took care of, your husband took care of you, or your mother, or somebody acted as midwife.
Yeah.
And the midwives weren't licensed or anything, it was just a friendly neighbor come over and made sure you were all right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got a question. What school did you first attend when your parents moved to Royal Oak Township? Now we're going into your school days.
Well, my first school days were down in the Hazel Park District, because we were living at 9.5 Mile Road, and what was that? It was still Martin Road.
Okay, what school did you attend when you moved to the Royal Oak Township?
Well, that was in Royal Oak Township.
Oh, okay.
Royal Oak Township goes from 14 Mile to 8 Mile.
Okay.
And it goes from DeQuinder, I believe, to Greenfield.
Okay.
A township is 6 miles square, 36 square miles in a township.
Okay.
6 by 6. And I went to the Martin Road School down there, I think, from toward the end of April to a month of May, and I think I left Martin Road School around the 8th or 10th of June. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, during the summer, my folks acquired the property out here on Harwood, and I start remodeling the house or building that house.
Okay.
And then we moved in there in September.
Okay.
And the school was nice. I was in the kindergarten.
The property at Harwood, when you moved there, you went to what? The Madison School District.
When I came out here on Harwood then in September.
Of what year?
That was in 1926.
Okay.
I started to school. I couldn't tell you whether we moved out on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, but I started school 2nd or 3rd of October.
Okay. At which school building in the Madison School?
Well, at that time it was Madison District, District 10.
Okay.
Right now, but the school district, the school was has since been sold to the Royal Oak District, and it was over at Hudson.
Okay.
In Stevenson.
Okay.
Called the Oakland School.
Oakland School.
Okay. And it was identical. It was the only time I ever heard of a school district building two schools off of one blueprint. And I think it was a very frugal, wise move.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't see every school being different.
Okay.
It's a big, big expense to the engineers and stuff. Every school's got to be different. I don't see it.
You told me some interesting facts about going to school during the Depression. What can you tell me something? Something about coal in the wintertime and trying to keep warm.
For a little fat kid, it was a bad nasty. It was cold. We didn't have the warm thermal clothing those days.
Okay.
You wore a skimpy winter underwear.
So you sat there all day in the school building, freezing?
Where I went to the Oakland School, they had a furnace.
Okay.
And that was a warm building. They had a regular furnace and everything. It was nice. But before that, though, you had your neighborhood schools on the corner where you see a little red schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a round oak heater, I understand, or a coal stove, but usually a round burning wood stove in the center of the building.
How did you get to school?
I walked. I was fortunate. I lived within 3 blocks of the school.
Okay.
That was one of the incentives to bring my folks out here, because my mother wanted us kids to have an education. Have a good education.
Okay.
And bless her, she did her best to work with me all the way through. She didn't graduate herself, but she went through the 10th or 11th grade, and she was a very intelligent woman, and she wanted me to always do better.
Madison School District had a good reputation even back then.
Well, it wasn't bad, but again, there weren't all the subjects. It was a good school.
Sure.
It was a small country district. It was not a consolidated school, but it was a district that was starting to grow.
They did a good job. They did the best they could do.
Well, for the kids that I know, that I went to school with, the majority of them were darn good students.
I have a question. Do you remember anything about the Kendall School? You were in that area.
It wasn't called the Kendall School at first.
Okay.
But it used to be a little white building.
I believe they called it the White School at first.
I don't know if they what they called it. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, we found something about that in the board minutes.
But it used to be on the east side of John R.
Okay.
Approximately. Give it maybe either where Andover comes through.
Okay,
John
right.
R,
across the street from the Chamber of Commerce.
Or across the street from the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
100 feet either way.
Okay, like right in front of Wilkinson. Right in the Wilkinson area.
Yes, it was
only
on the John R. side.
Right.
But they did not take that little white school down to build the old Wilkinson.
Okay.
Or at that time they called it, it was just Madison School. And they did not take the little white building down to build the building.
What did they do with that white building?
Well, that white building was moved over onto Lincoln Avenue.
Lincoln and Wolverine.
Yeah. And they called it then the Kendall School.
Right, after Frank Kendall, because that was the Kendall property.
That's right. Well, I don't think it was on the Kendall property, but he was one of the farmers there.
Yeah, it was the Kendall property,
though. I couldn't tell you that.
Yeah, we found some
records.
We found the deed where he deeded the land to the school district.
Well, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to find that, but we haven't been able to find anything else.
Yeah, was anything I told you instrumental in helping you or anything?
Yes, the fact that you remember where it was originally will help us a lot.
Yes. Well, the Kendall School was used as a little 3-4 room school. And the lady that was my mother's midwife used to be janitress over there during World War II.
Her name, do you remember her name?
Catherine Avery.
Oh, okay. And what happened to the building after World War II?
Well, after World War II, because there were so many war workers in the district, the government, they applied for, and the federal government built the Roosevelt School.
Okay.
And as I understood it, they gave it to the district school district for $1.
Okay. Well, what happened to the Kendall School?
And the Kendall School then was moved up to 11 Mile Road in Groveland.
From the farm area.
From the farm area. It was moved up to 11 Mile Road in Groveland.
Okay.
And then they made the Madison Methodist Church out of it.
Okay. Okay.
They revamped it some, put a basement under it and things like that, but they didn't do much of the exterior of the building.
Pretty much the same as what it was.
I would say it is, except when it was a school, it didn't have a basement under it.
Okay.
It just set up on props, on posts, or whatever you want to call them.
Could you name all the buildings that you attended, all the school buildings that you attended when you were in Madison School District?
I only went to the Oakland and the old Madison that they tore down.
Okay, very
but
good.
The Edison School was built approximately 1926.
Okay.
Because when they when my folks were moving off 11 Mile Road, some petition circulators came over to see if my ma would send the kids over to the Edison School.
Yeah.
But the only thing is the Royal Oak District came out as far as Lenox.
Okay.
That's a block east of Stevenson.
Okay.
Lenox. And we were just out of the Madison District. And my mom told me if she would love to have the Cavus kids go that near the school, but we had to go to the Royal Oak School.
Okay.
And we either had to go to the Ulysses S. Grant up in Royal Oak, which is up on Farnham, and we had to walk there in 1925, although there was a bus running on 11 Mile Road.
Okay.
I think perhaps the Martin buses started back at that time.
What year did you graduate from Madison High School?
I graduated in June of 38.
But you were through sooner than that, weren't you?
Oh yes, the graduating class was so small that they couldn't afford to have a separate graduating class for
depression
each,
again, right?
For depression, yes.
Yeah.
We hadn't made the recovery from the major big recession.
Okay.
And I actually graduated in January of 1938, but I had to wait till June to get the diploma with the A and B class combined.
What can you tell us about your class pictures? I thought this was interesting. What happened while you were taking your class pictures?
Well, the conditions were very, very tight on that class.
Sure.
When we went down to the, I don't know if there was Williams Photography. Or I'll have to look at the picture, what it says on it. I'll have to bring it in somewhere.
Sure.
I know where it is. I looked for my annuals and I couldn't find them. I didn't look far enough. There's a lot of stuff in my house. I don't know where it is.
Okay.
But
what happened? You tell me something about the tie
and
the coat.
We were so darn poor that for one of the boys, I think it was one of the Shutter boys, had a coat.
Okay.
A nice little sports jacket that fit all of us.
Okay.
And we were all about the same size.
Okay.
So the picture would look presentable, flash picture, of course, we all wore the same coat.
Okay, and you switched it.
We took it off, passed it around. Didn't even put a little hanky in the pocket, I don't think, or anything.
Same thing with the tie?
What?
Same thing with the tie?
I think two or three of us wore the same tie, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
But I know when I went to grade school, I wore the same little outing flannel jacket and little shirt-like.
No Calvin Klein jeans, no Reeboks, none of that kind of stuff.
No.
You were very resourceful.
Well, we used to wear little high-top shoes.
Okay.
They cost, I think, $1, $1.25, and they had a little... all the boys wanted these little high-top shoes because they had a little pocket in the side where you put a pocket knife.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they had the high-top shoes came up about halfway on your leg. Maybe they were 8-9 inches tall, and then on the right-hand shoe, you had a little pocket in there to put a 10-cent pocket knife in.
Okay, we got you graduated now. What did you decide to do after graduation?
You're trying to find a job.
Okay.
What they wanted at that time, like now, they wanted a 40-year-old brain on a 20-year-old.
Okay.
And it was hard to get the experience that they wanted. They wanted tool and die makers and machine operators and stuff like that. And now how can a kid in high school get it? Madison didn't have... I don't think I bumped it, did I?
No.
I don't. Madison didn't have much of a shop class. The shop class was comparatively new.
Okay.
When we had it, they had a couple of hammers, a couple of old handsaws in the shop class. They had I think the year I left, somebody sent in I think it was a Ford V8 engine that had cutouts in it so you could see the double wall around the motor for cooling, water cooling the cylinders, okay. Stuff like that. And so you got very little experience off it. They didn't have the tools to take the pieces. They had the engine, but no tools. And but it's all right. I remember the one year I built a lamp out of wood. We had to learn how to plane a taper into a piece of wood 2 inches square, mm-hmm. and then drill it so you could drill it through by hand with a brace and bit. You know what I mean?
No power tools.
No power tools. We didn't have them. So you had to drill the hole through with a brace and bit, and then glue the upright to another block of wood that you had tapered to make it appealing, then run the wire through it, and then put your socket on top of it for the shutoff to hold the bulb.
Okay.
And that was the project 1 year.
Okay.
But when it came actually to get to work, work was very hard to come by.
Okay. What did you do?
When I got out of school, my parents at that time were on the welfare. My pa was 73
sure.
or 72 or 73 years
okay.
old. All right, he was approaching 70.
Okay.
After all, he was born in 1866. So
there was no Social Security back then.
Social Security, they were just issuing the numbers.
Okay.
There was no old age pension.
Okay.
So you had to work.
He was almost self-employed his whole life.
Yeah, but still, there was you. Who saved any money?
Sure.
When you worked for
that's what I mean. There was
the
no protection for you.
If there's many a days during the Depression that I worked for the neighbors.
Sure.
For my dinner.
Yeah.
They had a bit of garden, a couple acres of ground, and they could always use an extra hand.
Okay.
I worked for a couple of neighbors there just for my dinner.
Did you work for any of the government programs?
Well, when I was in school, I worked for what do they call it, National Youth or something. They used to. It was for $6 a month, as I remember. I used to work approximately an hour and a half, 2 hours a night, sweeping out the Oakland school to help the janitor out.
Okay.
And that was 5 days a week. And I had, when I got out of school, when I left Madison at 3:30, I'd walk over to the Oakland school, and I would sweep at least one hall, the stairwell going from the first to the second floor, and I think one, two, three, four, about four classrooms on the second floor.
Okay.
All for $6 a month, 22 times a month I swept it.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it, about a quarter a day? Or like about a quarter a day.
Okay, after you graduated, did you
that
continue
was,
to work for
that after I graduated, well, then I was done with that. Then
okay.
I had to look for a job,
okay.
and my folks were on the welfare, so being I was able-bodied,
okay.
I had to take a WPA job.
Oh, okay.
I had to take a WPA job to sort of a work relief.
Right.
And at first, it was bull work. Well, first I had a job as a timekeeper.
Okay.
I worked for one project where they were working on the streets up here, putting drainage on the streets, trying
okay.
to get rid of the water holes and stuff, and developing a drainage program. I worked there as timekeeper about 4 months until that project shut down. Then I transferred to, they transferred me to another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other project, I was it was done in the winter. They were breaking frost 2 or 3 feet thick with sledgehammers and wedges.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hard work. But
this
I
is
got,
all back work. This is all.
It was
yeah.
bull work or back work.
Yeah.
And I felt I had too much education for that.
Sure.
Well, that project petered out because none of these WPA projects were big. They were just small projects.
They were make work kind of things.
Then after that, for a while, I worked on not the 12 town drains, but they were putting the big sewers down through. The main trunk line east of John R., they put that through. While I never worked on it, the sewer itself,
uh-huh.
I did work on, when they put the streets back over it, was where I worked with a sledgehammer down in Hazel Park, which was right over
no kidding.
Breaking the frost off of what was a Highland Avenue in Battelle.
Oh, okay.
And I also worked down there when I wasn't pounding with the wedges in the little warmer weather, I pushed a wheelbarrow.
In addition to this, you ran a store for a while.
That will come a little bit later.
Okay.
Now, these WPA projects, there was a termination date. I mean, when you went on the WPA for supporting yourself, there was a termination date. After 18 months on the WPA, they terminated your stay with them.
Okay.
And because work was so scarce, while I was on WPA, the folks were off the welfare. But when WPA let me go because the 18 months, they were back on the welfare.
Okay.
So I got on the WPA the second series of work.
Okay.
So in other words, I worked from 1938 when I graduated till approximately 1939 when the thing worked out.
Okay.
And then after that, I got on there. I got on a second set of WPA projects, and I was fortunate. I got to be like storekeeper for the surplus commodities. And I used to have the store in Raya Luke up by the market there, that Troy.
By the Troy, farmer's market?
Yeah, by Troy and Black Merritt. But the farmer's market was there, but it was nowhere. I don't think it was anywhere near as big as it is now. I'm pretty sure it was there.
Okay. People bought what from you, like rice and flour?
Well, they had a little tent out back of the house there. That was the welfare office there. Okay. I think 111 South Troy or 107 South Troy. And I had the little surplus food store. There was nothing more but a tent with a wooden floor in it and a coal stove to heat it. Mm-hmm. And they had the shelves in there, and I used to give out surplus food, whatever they had. Okay. And it was rather scant. Sometimes you'd get a couple of pounds of flour or gram flour, once in a while a little bit of lard. Sometimes you get a few beans, and sometimes rice, or sometimes raisins, whatever they had to give out. And I had to keep record of that and account for it, and they brought the supplies down from Pontiac every day. I suppose you might say it's similar to what it is now, because even though I'm retired, I don't qualify for surplus right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I enjoyed working there. I met many fine elderly people.
You were there how long?
I was there approximately 7 or 8 months. Then they transferred me to the store in Ferndale at 9 Mile Road in Wanda.
Oh, you did this for quite a while then.
I did that job. I had the two stores, and then while I was to work on the surplus food, I took the civil service examination for the post office.
Okay. What year was this?
I think.
Close.
I think I took it in April or May of 1939.
And then you were appointed when?
And I got my my first appointment. I was called in to be an employee of the post office in, I think, April of 1941 for a regular
route.
Regular temporary position.
Oh, okay.
I had to go in on a probationary period, or like a period. Ryan Oak was expanding at that time, and they had openings for four people.
Okay.
And I was one of the four that got the job.
Luckily.
And approximately, at that year, there was 300 people took it at the time I took that examination. And I think I was 7th of the total 300. 7th or 11th of the 300. And I got the 4th job off of that civil service exam.
When you became a postman, that was your job here in Madison Heights. That's when you finally became.
That was the first good job and the only job I ever had.
Okay.
I had enough sense when you got a bird in the hand
to not
let it go.
Yeah. Okay, what was your route as a postman in this area?
Well, no, in this area, I worked from 10 Mile Road to all points north that got foot delivery.
Okay.
And now that came up, I used to start at 10 Mile Road. I would go west of I-75 on the cross streets. I would go down East Guthrie as far as 900. I'd go down one. There was the only one built up enough for home delivery. I'd go down one side of the street and walk back the other.
Okay.
Down one side and back the other, or deadhead back. And then I would finish my route out, and it went out as far as Townley and Farnham, Groveland and Farnham.
You were covering a big area.
I had a big area, but the idea being it was sparsely built up.
Okay, you had how many people on your route? About? How many families?
I know the first Christmas I worked there, I think the supervision said I had 1,200 stops. And then after that, I got where I couldn't make it during the winter. Conditions were too rough.
There were no Jeeps or cars or anything like that. You did this all on foot.
Sure, Leather Express. You walked.
Okay.
You had to go out and you got in the post office in the morning at 6 o'clock. The mail was there for you to work on. If it wasn't, it was in very shortly.
Now, this post office was where?
This post office was down on John R. Street in Hazel Park.
Okay.
Just a little bit south of where it is now. And the adjoining building used to be the Railroad Township Fire Department and Water Board office.
Now, they got their mail from where?
They all came out of Royal Oak.
Okay.
They used to take it down by truck.
By truck.
By truck. They had the panel trucks, and they take it down there and take it to Hazel Park Post Office. Well, then we come out of the after we got it sorted, there were two dispatchers in the morning. There was one for when we got there, and there was one come in later mail for about 7:45, 8 o'clock. And after we got that sorted,
did you have machines to do this?
No, we had by hand.
Everybody did everything by hand.
No mechanization at all. The only mechanization was the canceling machine.
Okay. What did you have, a big pile of mail in a bag, and you just kind of...
The mail was brought down pre-sorted to the route.
From Royal Oak.
From Royal Oak.
I see.
It was brought down and sorted to each route.
I see.
Now, when I started in Royal Oak, when I started in Hazel Park, there were six routes, and my route was the seventh one in Hazel Park.
Okay.
What they have now, I don't know.
How large was your route today, back then, compared to the routes today? What are they today? If you had 1,200 back then, what do they have today, approximately? Or at least when you quit?
When I quit, the average route was around 500, 450, 370.
So you were humping pretty good.
Well,
almost twice as much. Over twice as much.
I was carrying an awful load and carrying it on my shoulders. I remember carrying any number of Sears and Roebuck catalogs, Montgomery and Ward catalogs, and stuff like that. And they weighed, when I first went there, they didn't make a special effort to deliver them by truck. You carried any package up to 4 pounds.
Did you deliver house to house? Now, you said Guthrie was house to house, but there was something interesting. They weren't all house to house, were they?
They weren't all house to house. Now, you take East Kenneth, Rowan, Barrett, Dallas, Brockton.
Okay.
Wait, take that back. Kenneth, Rowan, Barrett were all mailboxes along John R. Street.
Okay.
The east of John R. used to box in on John R. Street as far as 900 to 1,000. And when you got above that, there were a few houses above that, but then they used to box in at 10 Mile Road and Cousins.
When you say box in, what do you mean by box in?
They had a rural mailbox.
Okay.
And you walked down to get it. But the rural carrier used to deliver way down there, 1,200 of those streets. The rural carrier out of Hazel Park, Orville Hoop, had a car.
Okay.
And then he used to deliver, from 8 Mile in Ryan up to 14, and I think 13, 14 in Ryan. But he had a car, and he had an awful big route.
You took what when you came from the post office in Hazel Park? Bus?
I used to take the Martin bus out.
Okay.
They used to give me a dime bus there in the morning and a dime for at night.
Oh.
And I had to drop the dime in the fare box.
Okay. I want to get back to this boxing thing. Now, you said... Are there banks of boxes? Was it one box alone, or was it several boxes together?
Each individual home occupant put their own mailbox down there on the post.
Okay.
Some of them were neat. Some of them were nothing at all.
So you had several boxes all in one area.
And maybe along Guthrie, along Kenneth, they were nailed on the corner of a building, the landlord got mad about it, and then he insisted that they take them down, so the people had to provide a couple of fence posts, and then they put a couple of planks across the top and nailed the mailboxes to them, and they had to have their name and house number on the mailboxes.
Okay, now the reason
but there was no numerical order for them. No numerical order or name for them. You put your name on it. The first box could have been 900, the next one would be 50, the next one would be 280, another one would be whatever the number was for the house, and they didn't know those rotations. But there was no...
Really had to be careful when you put things in there.
I prided myself on the fact all the while I delivered mail, I delivered, I think, with a 99.8 accuracy. I could go all day and take out 3,000 pieces of mail. Not on the foot route, but when I also ended up with a mounted route, and I used to take out 3,200 pieces of mail on the mounted route, which was along Stevenson Highway, the businesses and stuff like that, and go along Stevenson, and I didn't take two pieces of mail back at the end of the day.
Excellent.
And I prided myself on my accuracy, and I didn't make any missed deliveries. Besides looking at the house number on the letter, I also looked at the name, because there's too many streets that have identical numbers.
The area that you were delivering, they were boxed because this was what?
Well, the post office required that they be over 50% built up and have sidewalks.
And they weren't. Okay.
I mean, like on East Kenneth there, when I first started carrying on East Kenneth, I think they had about 9 or 10 stops.
Okay. You would have really had to walk to deliver them to the door, wouldn't you?
I would have had to walk country miles, so to speak.
Yeah.
But they used to have the regulation at that time, if you had a postage due, or you had a registered letter, or a COD, you had to walk 2 blocks off of your given path to make an attempt to deliver that package.
Okay. So you still did some walking.
The boxes were there, but you ignored all. You put the mail for those boxes in, then you took the mail for the house with you, and the package, the mail that matched that package, and you walked down. Missed off here. Anyhow, we'd gather the mail up And then we had group it there. I had five letters for the house and the magazine and the package, okay. COD.
Yeah.
I'd walk down to the house and take the mail along for the people as a service, so they wouldn't have to come back themselves.
Okay.
And tell them that was it. And I would try to collect on the postage due or get a signature on the registry letter or insured package, or if it was a COD, try to collect the money.
Did you have one bag or two?
I had one. We had a big one.
Yeah, it must have been huge.
And it was a nice leather satchel.
Uh-huh.
They called it a satchel instead of a bag.
Did your shoulder ever bother you the whole time you were doing
no,
it?
No, but if you feel my shoulder, you can feel a nice little bump in it from carrying the load. Bring your go up lengthwise on it. Feel the bump in it?
Oh, yeah, I do.
It isn't on the other side.
No.
No. I carried tons of mail on that shoulder, and... But I never had any pains. I was ambidextrous. I was able to work off of both shoulders. But it took me a long time to see it. I used to see the older letter carriers come down in the wind. You'd swear if they went the wrong way, they would tip over. And I always wanted to have a straight stature when I stood up. So I learned how to carry off of both shoulders.
You said something about rest stops. There weren't any restrooms for your
There were no restrooms, no lavatories. When I started out John R. Street in the morning, my first stop was Murray's Drug Store. Then the Kroger store had closed up for the Depression. Sure. Then there was a Friedlander Real Estate Office. And then there was a Sunoco gas station. Then I went across the street to the feed store. There was a feed store there, acquaintance of my mother and father, John LaFond. And his daughter and son-in-law did live on Guthrie in his apartment in Madison Heights here, but their married name was Drake. Mm-hmm. And I understand when I was walking my dog here a couple years ago, I ran into one of the children, one of the Drake children,
uh-huh.
And she was driving bus for the school district here in Madison Heights. I couldn't know. I met her in front of the Monroe School down there. I was always talkative. I love to talk to people, and because I feel you don't learn anything if you don't discuss things with people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the best listener because I'm always trying to think of an answer for what they got. I have an opinion on everything, or wrong. I got an opinion.
That's part of why you like to be a postman. You like people.
I suppose it was, but it was also a darn good living. In 35 years, I never missed one payday.
That's nice.
I never had any layoff. Never got any unemployment insurance. Nothing. Well, I shouldn't say one payday. Day was late about 4 days because the post office salaries at that time they were subject to congressional budget approval, and the Congress hadn't approved the budget.
Okay.
So they held back the salary until the budget was approved. They didn't believe too much in deficit spending. But that was the only time I ever waited for a check, and I never made big money.
But you made it all the time.
But I made it steady. I could plan on it.
You had some interesting businesses on your route. One of them was Pathfinder Kennels.
Yes, that Pathfinder Kennels, pardon me, Pathfinder Dog Kennels was one of the original CNI dogs. I think people thought there was something wrong with him when they start talking of letting a dog lead people around.
Him who? Who was the gentleman?
The fellow moved out on Dartmouth. Well, we were living on the farm at 11 Mile in Stevenson,
okay.
I think about 1922, and he built the area had been partially subdivided, and he was out on Dartmouth, north of Gardenia, I believe, if I can remember the number right, 28036.
His name was what?
Glenn Staines.
Okay.
Glenn Staines, S-T-A-I-N-E-S.
So he was the forerunner to CNI dogs.
He was one of the forerunners of CNI dogs, and he had numerous dogs back there in the kennels. And, of course, when you got dogs, you woof, woof, woof all the time, and the barking was irritating, and there's no way that you could do much about it. Now, I don't know what kind of dogs that he started out with, but he finally got around to specializing in Doberman Spencers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, he specialized in Dobermans. And they're good for that because they are pretty much a one-man dog. I never trusted Doberman.
Okay. As a postman, you had to be familiar with streetcar lines and bus lines. Can you tell us something about the streetcars and the bus lines?
Yeah. As for streetcar lines, I would say I never had to contend with that because... The streetcar line that would have maybe served the area Well, they used to call it the Toonerville Trolley.
Okay.
And it used to run up, it started down at 6 Mile Road in Woodward. It was put in more or less as transportation for the workers at the Ford Highland Park plant.
Oh, I see. Okay.
During the teens.
Okay.
And to serve during World War One and after. And at first, that streetcar line only came through to 8 Mile Road.
Okay.
And then the following year, they extended it to the 9 or 9 and a half. And then another year, they extended it to the 11. They put that in piecemeal as they could have the working money to work with.
Okay.
And I believe it was Detroit United Mail Rail, Detroit United, DOR.
It went along where? Stevenson?
Stevenson Highway.
Okay.
In Detroit, it come out. It went east on 6 Mile Road to Oakland Avenue, made a left-hand turn north, and come up Oakland Avenue, and followed the Oakland Avenue, and would be now the northbound lane, the service lane of I-75, the service drive of I-75. Mm-hmm. I think they're still in Detroit. They still call it Oakland. When you get north the 8 Mile Road, they call it northbound Stevenson.
Okay.
And the railroad, streetcar line, pretty much followed that right on out. And across John R. Street there, just like the expressway does, made that S-curve in it.
Okay.
And then it came, continued north on Stevenson Highway to 4th Street.
Oh, okay. At
4th Street, it turned into Royal Oak.
Okay.
And then it went into Royal Oak and used to stop at 4th and Main Street.
Okay.
And that, of course, was downtown Royal Oak. And there, it also met the interurbans coming out of Detroit.
Okay.
And those cars were going to Rochester, Romeo, okay. Pontiac, and stuff like that.
You said something about it being up in the air.
That was in Rochester.
Okay.
They had a big trestle built up there in Rochester on telegraph poles.
Mm-hmm.
Same as the thing like to show the trestles in the old Western movies.
Kind of wobbly?
Very wobbly. Very used to sway, my mom used to say. She used to go out to Rochester on it and get mowing machine parts. And their old streetcar would come barreling down through there, maybe 25, 30 miles an hour, and it would sway. The track wasn't 100% straight and smooth.
Okay.
Now they pride themselves on it. They set them with the transit. When the surveyor puts the transit down, they shoot right down the railroad, and he tells them to move it over a little bit. You look at the railroad tracks, they're like a taut string between two points.
You don't remember any spur lines that may have come off in the Royal Oak Township, say,
no,
around
no.
11 John R.
No, no, nothing. Nothing on that. I have never known, and I've known the area.
Okay.
Well, as long as I can remember.
Okay. Bus lines. What about the bus lines?
The bus lines, there's been numerous small companies started out John R. Street to try in competition with the streetcar. But they used to come out John R. Street all the way from 6 Mile Road.
Okay.
And they also used to go down to the, and they lined up in front of the Ford Highland Park plant.
Mm-hmm.
And there were numerous bus lines and bus companies there, but the Martin are there. I guess one time they had a big beaver line, they called it BB.
Okay.
Another time they had some other line there, and I think it had ended up at Martin's.
Was the
Martin
one.
Bus Company, where at Superior Fish right now.
Okay.
That was there. That's where they ended up being when they sold out to Simpty. Yes.
Oh, okay. That was across. That's across the street from the market in
that's
in Royal
Oak. Right across the Royal Oak Market, and Martin's built that big thing, that big bus depot there after World War II, perhaps 1950.
You had a bus driver that lived close to you, didn't you? That used to tell you about the bus.
Well, I was a letter carrier. I used to talk to a lot of them. I used to ride the bus at uh-huh. the seat right behind the driver, and I knew some of them were my patrons.
Uh huh. Now there was one that you said one of the buses that had a hard time. Didn't run real well.
They all the buses were worn out.
Okay.
I think I know during my time when I rode them, they were the old white buses, and they were maybe about 35, 40 passengers, a four-cylinder job, straight stick.
Okay.
It was the forerunner of the automatic transmission.
Okay.
Because you just used the clutch when you started off from a dead stop, and after that, then they synchronized shifting gears with the motor.
My dad had a Dodge like that.
And I have driven a Chevrolet. I have driven a 1950 Chevrolet the same way. I was clever at it. Didn't after you start out with a clutch, you could shift gears just with the accelerator. And you put off the accelerator, start going. When you feel the transmission break loose, take it right up in there real quick. And you could do it without clashing the gears or anything.
You said there was some bus, though, that had a hard time. It didn't start, didn't run all the time, needed a battery.
The Martin buses at that time had 400,000 miles on them, I think.
Okay.
And the one old bus driver, George Miller, I think he lived over on Park Quarter Hales, over in that area, North 11 Mile Road.
Okay.
And he had driven for Martin for any number of years. But a lot of times he specialized in getting the afternoon shift. And then he'd stay down in Highland Park. He'd go down the last. He'd round up the people going home, or they'd gather. And he had the last bus that night. And when they come on out John R Street, and he had to stop every couple of blocks, if the bus stalled, which had been common for an engine with that much they run good, but they would stall anyhow. They were temperamental.
Just tired.
Well, I suppose you could say they were tired. They were worn out. But even cars of today, even with your computers and stuff on them for ignition and carburation and stuff, they still had trouble with them. They're never 100% tuned, and you don't tune them with a screwdriver. But at that time, you could.
So what happened when they stalled?
But those old buses, they'd come out and they'd come to a stop. They had air brakes on them. They'd stop. And when he went, sometimes the motor would die out and it was idling a little bit too low, or the carburetor was off on the adjustment, the motor would stall.
Yeah.
Well, zzzz on the starter, and then until the battery died. Well, you figure the internal lights on the battery and the headlights and everything, and then starting to start it with the lights on, the battery couldn't turn it over. So the guys had to get out of the bus.
Okay.
And they all walk behind the bus and start pushing, and then he'd put it in gear, and they'd give it a jump start with let the clutch out with a jerk.
Okay.
And the bus would start. Then they'd wait for him, and they'd all get back on the bus, and he'd drive to the next stop.
So you worked your way home.
Yeah, you worked your way, and it was a lark. The guys, it was fun to get out of the bus and give it a push. It was a common joke. And maybe they did this several times a night.
This bus went up for how far?
It came out John R. Street to 11 Mile Road.
11 Mile. Okay, and then turned around and went back.
No, then it went west into Royal Oak.
Okay, where the Superior Fish is.
Well, that was headquarters, but that wasn't the turnaround point.
Okay.
The turnaround point was approximately around the Washington Square building.
Okay.
They used to go down Royal Oak to Center Street, which is between Maine and Washington.
Okay.
And they'd make a left-hand turn there and go down toward 4th Street.
Okay.
And they would stop there. There was a restaurant at 4th and in Center. And they used to stop there, sometimes go into the restaurant and get a cup of coffee or something like that before they turn around and come back. Mm-hmm. Then they'd go on 4th Street to Washington, and they'd go back north to 11 Mile Road, and then they'd turn right again and come back out 11 Mile Road to John R. Then they would retrace their steps down John R. Mm-hmm. to 6 Mile Road. And they made a left-hand turn in a 6 Mile Road in Woodward and went down as on Woodward as far as Manchester, or not quite Manchester. They would make a U-turn there in the street. And then they would pull over at the curb and wait for the customers the fellas come out of work, or the ladies coming out of the up on the streetcars from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd catch the bus to come over, come out John R. Street.
Okay. Can you tell us something about the intersection of John R. and 11 Mile Road when you were a postman? What was on those different corners?
Well, when I was, I can go back farther than that on it. I can go back to approximately 1926, 1927.
Okay. Yeah, that's excellent.
And in 1926 or 20 and 27, during that era there, if I can remember right, on the southeast corner, Melbourne Stevens owned the property, and he on the weekends he used to sell hot dogs.
Okay.
And soft drinks, and then it did pretty good. And then he built a barbecue there, and he'd barbecue a hind of beef, a quarter of beef, something like that.
Was this all open air? Was there a building, or just kind of out in the open?
The barbecue was out in the open.
Okay.
And I think at first he just had some tables there, and then he built a building.
Okay.
And he also had a gasoline station there, I think, eventually, because the people would come out from Detroit and they'd have a little lunch and buy a little gas and stuff like that. So he worked it up into a business.
Okay.
And in the northwest corner, there was a... I'm going back as far as I remember. There was a brick store there that was run by George Constance.
Okay.
He was Greek, a wonderful fellow. I just loved him. Nice people. I knew his wife, his kids, and everything. And then next door to the west, that was, I think, his number was 14, West 11 Mile Road.
Okay.
The first building. And then the second building was number 30, and that was a two-story building. It used to be a grocery store.
Okay.
And that was built by a Clem Shoemaker.
Okay.
He got to be eventually Royal Oak Township treasurer.
Okay.
Now, whether he was tied up to the township politics at the time of the building the store, I don't know. But that was a nice store in his day.
That's where the Outpost Gun Shop.
That's where the Outpost Gun Shop was. And I remember that being a grocery store. I remember it being a 5 and 10 cent store during World War II.
Okay, how about the other corners? We've got north, east.
On the northeast corner, right on the corner, back in about 1940, Fred Shewalter, S-H-E-W-A-L-T-E-R, Shewalter, built a real estate office there. He had a little real estate office, and then he put a mobile home behind it, a small one, about a 20-foot trailer behind it.
Okay.
And he was alone. He was a widower.
Okay.
And he lived behind the real estate office.
Okay.
And then behind that to the north, John R. Lumber. And now John R. Lumber, if I can recall right, started in there, I think. I should go down and find out for sure. I think around 1939, 1940.
Okay.
And they had a little small building there. They started on a shoestring too, but they had moved out from Dearborn.
Okay. Okay, now we've got one more corner to do.
And then on the southwest corner.
Yeah.
The southwest corner, it eventually developed into a mobile gas station.
Okay.
And there was who had it originally? I cannot be sure, but I remember Fred Hodson being there. H-O-D-S-O-N.
Okay.
Freddie Hodson. He had it for, and Warren Martin had it for a long time. Warren Martin had it maybe longer. And then the brewery.
That's not the same Martin from the bus company.
Oh, no, no. No, no relation to my knowledge.
Okay.
Although one of the sons, or I think one of the sons or grandsons of the Martin Bus Company, married a girl from off of Alger Street.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And but that was much, much, much later. But this Martin had the mobile station there. And then I remember also family the Broders had Broder, the Richard Broder,
mm-hmm.
and John had a gas station there. Now there's================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================
took off as far as subdivisions, houses?
Most of the subdivisions were already platted.
Okay.
But the building spurred after 1947.
Okay.
After World War II was done.
A lot of houses built.
Oh, yes. So that area down around John R. and Lincoln, and from Lincoln to, Andover, and between John R. and Stevenson, they built that in 1947-48. Possibly finished it off to the most part by 1949.
Mm-hmm.
But now the area north of Andover, between John R. and Stevenson, there used to be a bunch of small houses in there that were built during the 20s. They called them the Harrison Homes, which would be 26,500 up on Hamden, Brettonwood, Lenox, Hamden, Brettonwood, Dartmouth. And now when it came to Barrington, Palmer, and Alger, Brush, it was another subdivision. But this Harrison subdivision, they built those little small one-room houses, or not, pardon me, not one, three or four-room houses on the back of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
They were felt that eventually people would make a garage out of them or tear them down, but they were temporary homes small, and that the people would build the main house out in front.
Okay.
And then they could either rent the little one on the back or what. But then they sold them during the, they were building them back in 1924, I think, when we were there.
It was handy to have these lumber yards, like John R. Lumber. There was another lumber yard, too,
wasn't
there?
Well, there were several. I remember when Jim's Lumber started.
Okay. Jim's is where?
Down in Harwood, between Harwood and Lincoln on the east side of John R.
Okay.
And I remember when Jim's Lumber came in there, and Jim was had a lot of sickness.
Remember his last name?
Cruz, C-R-E-W-S, Jim Cruz.
Okay.
And he was a good sport. Well, everybody loved Jim. He was very accommodating, obliging.
Okay.
He'd bend over backwards to cut the knots out of a board for you, or sort through the pile and get you the board you want, and so forth. And that's what made his business, the personal service.
Mm-hmm.
They were really out for it. They started on a shoestring, too. And I remember the little office he put on the corner, and had some fence posts out there and a few clothesline posts. maybe clothesline posts to make the tee out and put, so you could put lines between them.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had some of those. They were about 8 or 10 feet long, piled up out there, and he had fence posts. And as he sold a few, he got bigger. He got a few 2x4s, and then pretty soon he had little, after a year or two, he put a little wooden building there.
Okay.
And he grew up progressively. Then I remember Jack's Auction across the street, which is now National Ladder.
Okay, yeah.
Jack built that one during the, I think during the 40s. And that one was built and started out small, and he kept adding on.
Okay.
And he used to have an auction sale there. Every Friday night, I think it was every Friday night was auction night.
All different kinds of materials?
Anything and everything. He never sold any animals, to my knowledge, maybe a few pets or a few
mm-hmm.
birds. But he sold anything anybody wanted to get rid of, furniture or anything at all. A few tools, maybe a baby buggy, a few chairs, little furniture, anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He toward the end, he has so much stuff gathered up there. They either given to him or he had to buy it to get rid of it. That he had all kinds of boxes of screws and nuts and bolts
yeah.
and notions and everything.
Yeah.
Jack and his wife Florence were fine people. I enjoyed visiting with them too.
His last name was what?
Cantrell.
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 Okay.
And they lived there for a number of times. And he got to be Jack toward the end couldn't make a living off the auction building. Got into bail bonds. He worked for the police department for people in jail. He wanted to get out. He'd sell them bail bonds. Now,
okay.
Who he worked in conjunction with, I don't know. Usually, you've got to have a backer on it.
We have an interesting situation in Madison Heights today. People are up in arms against the incinerator. Everybody complains about the incinerator. What do you think about the incinerator? And what do you remember about why we got stuck with the incinerator?
I tell you, sir, we didn't get stuck with the incinerator. We asked for it, more or less asked for it. We were glad to see it.
Okay. You wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be living on Harwood if
I
we
would.
Hadn't.
There's every chance I would, but
okay.
I'd be going crazy with 2,000 airplanes a day taking off and landing.
Okay.
Because the reason the incinerator got there...
As you remember it.
As I remember it.
Okay.
And it's absolute. If you want to dig up the records in the Tribune and perhaps in the Detroit News, too.
Okay.
Detroit, as of now, was always looking for another airport. The one at Connors and Gratiot was too small, and they felt the one out there in Wayne, Middle Belt,
yeah,
Middle Belt in 94, that was too far up.
Yeah.
It was only a small airport, too.
Yeah.
They wanted to build the main airport for the city of Detroit. They were going to put the terminal at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder.
Oh, okay.
They were going to close DeQuinder off for 2 miles, and they were going to put the terminal buildings there. And they were going to take out of Madison Heights between John R. and DeQuinder, and they were going to take out of Warren between DeQuinder and Ryan. And they were going to take that area from, in other words, from John R. to Ryan and from 12 to 14 Mile Road.
You're talking about a big
gonna,
area.
They were going to take out 2,500 and what, 20 acres? 2,540 acres? 640 acres to a square mile, and they were going to take out 2 square miles to put the major Wayne County Airport there, Detroit City Airport there.
You're talking about a good chunk of Madison Heights disappearing.
Well, a good portion of Madison Heights and a good portion of Warren.
Yeah.
The two cities there, I always consider the two together.
Yeah.
Because they didn't give a darn about boundary lines with North Dakota County or anything else, North Dakota County line, 8 Mile Road. They wanted the property. It was vacant. Just like now they're talking about going out around 28, 29 Mile
yeah.
Road. Going out there, grab it. And
so what happened?
Well, they were there. At that time, too, there was a question of disposal, rubbish disposal. And they figured out they used to have to haul everything out, the tin cans, the rubbish, the junk. After World War II, they no longer salvaged tin cans for the war effort.
Uh-huh.
And they had to get rid of it somewhere. Well, they established, it was kind of I don't know the exact process of establishing it, but then they had to find a place to dispose of it.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was a way, the incinerator had high chimneys.
Okay.
And they were going to burn it. So they had to have a place to put it. So George Horkey, bless him, and the township board here, they induced the incinerator authority to build over here where it is on John R. Street there, just by Red Run Drive. They let him acquire the property and give him the building permit to build the incinerator there.
Put the kibosh on the airport.
As soon as they put as the Detroit had saw the permit and everything issued for the incinerator, they wanted nothing at all to do with it because they had had prior to that, they had had numerous experiences at the city airport. They had a huge gas tank there. It was maybe 100 feet in diameter and 400, 500 feet tall. Mm-hmm. It was a mammoth big gas tank for the where they used to store the gas or manufacture some of the gas there for heating and cooking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the Detroit had enough of chimneys. So as soon as they pay for the incinerator here, the airport was done.
Okay.
They dropped it entirely, and it was a matter of only a short time that they bought the property now surrounding Metropolitan Airport. They bought the additional property around it. But we would have been stuck with that major airport here.
And a big piece out of Madison Heights.
A big piece out of both cities. And it would have been, and the main runway was going to run from 14 Mile in Ryan to 12 Mile Road in John Arthur. We'll get that runway about 12, 13,000 feet long for the big planes coming. And all of that would have gone over Madison Heights.
And Ferndale and Hazel
and
Park.
And Royal Oak and Hazel Park and Ferndale. So everybody was happy to see the incinerator come here. And I believe the incinerator, but I'm not sure, was put in before the John Page School.
So we didn't get the shaft.
I don't think we did. The shaft, the bigger shaft, would have been the airport.
Okay. You retired what year from the post office?
January the 1st, 1975.
You've lived here all your life. Why do you stay?
Love it. I don't know anything else. I'm like a tree. My bone, they stuck me in the ground, and that's it.
This is like it's home for you, isn't it?
This is home.
Now, you made a statement to me that I thought was really nice. From your look at the city today and your city yesterday, how do you think we turned out?
It's beautiful.
Really?
The city of Madison Heights, as far as I'm concerned, it's home. We have our growing pains. We all do. Growing up, we have our growing pains. But the Madison Heights has turned into a lovely city. It issues services. I've got relation or had relation lived in Detroit, the big city of Detroit. Madison Heights, I don't think the taxes are any higher here in Madison Heights. They're well put to use. You see where your taxes are going. You see a wonderful garbage collection. You see a good road maintenance, although I wish they'd fill a few potholes once in a while along the service drive. But the garbage collection, recycling is perfect. I don't know how it could be improved.
Okay.
The police department is the epitome of success. I wouldn't want to change it. There's nothing wrong with the police. They respond well to the calls. The fire department is good.
You're a good booster.
Well, why not? It's my home. I'm proud of it.
That's right.
I'm proud of it. I'm glad to say that I'm from Madison Heights.
Mr. Ryder, this concludes our interview. Thank you for your cooperation. This tape will now become part of the Madison Heights Historical Collection.
It's my pleasure to give it to you. I wish I could give you more to at a later date if you have the opportunity.
We will ask you back again.